everyone being involved matters, but if the leadership is not on board and is not consistent about talking about it, living it, putting it into action, it will not happen in the organization.
Welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. Just sit back, relax, and learn from the leaders of today. It's a journey. Each one is different, unique, inspiring. Let's get started. Our guest for episode 229 is none other than Celine Williams, the founder and chief strategist of Revisionary. Celine Williams is an international speaker and the founder of Revisionary, a boutique consulting firm providing executive coaching, leadership development, and culture services to human-focused businesses around the world. Celine has almost 20 years of experience working with growing organizations to help them navigate change and build leadership capacity, and is the trusted advisor to leaders and executives in a variety of industries. She is sought after for expertise in accelerating team performance, designing culture, navigating change, and facilitating effective communication. Celine Williams, welcome to 20 Minute Leaders. How are you?
I am wonderful, thank you. How are you?
I am doing great, thank you very much. I'm in Tel Aviv, and where are you right now?
I'm in Toronto, Canada.
In Toronto, Canada. And you know, the one good thing that maybe happened through this whole crisis is that I get to talk to people from all over the world in all sorts of weird hours. I'm watching darkness, you're watching the sunrise. It's beautiful. Celine, executive coach, founder of Revisionary, vast experience both in the entrepreneurial scene, in the tech ecosystem, whether it's as a mentor, business development, culture coach, you name it. I'd love to talk about leadership and about the different challenges that people face and how to overcome them, what we can learn from the pandemic, and what you've learned over the past 20 years as a coach. So why don't you start off by telling me a little bit about yourself, and we'll get the ball rolling from there.
Sure. So I'll tell you a little bit about my journey, because I, as much as I would love to say I've been a coach for 20 years since I came out of university, that's not true. But I have had a vast career. I've done a lot of different things. When I was actually in university, I started my first business that I always joke was like the result of greed. Basically, I didn't want to be making $7 an hour working in a retail store. So I started tutoring for a company, which was, I was making $25 an hour, which when, most people my age were making seven, I was like, this is great. I am rolling in money. And then I found out that they were charging students $50 or $75 an hour.
Wow.
And I was like, hold on. No. I'm just going to do this myself. And so I started a tutoring, so I joke it was out of greed, but it was really an opportunity that I saw that I had a sort of a specialty in tutoring. So I was getting a very specific group of kids that were coming to me. So I was like, why don't I leverage that and just do my own thing? So that's what I did.
So you were talking to me about making $25 an hour. It's not about the greed. It was about the opportunity and about the curiosity. Continue the journey from there, please.
Yeah. So I started my business, and then I ended up creating a program. It was at the time. It's so funny because I look back, and when I talk to entrepreneurs and when I'm mentoring, I often use this story, even though it was 20-ish years ago. Because I created a program with a very specific niche of students in mind and a very specific need. And I got, I became known for that program. So when I moved to Montreal, I ended up taking a corporate job, which is, I'll get into in a second. I sold the IP for that program because one was doing it, right? It's it was a tutoring program. It's not like I was making millions of dollars. It was nothing, but I sold it to another tutoring company because I hadn't, found a specific niche, created a solution for a problem that they have that no one had thought to do. So over the next few years, this tutoring company used that and brought those students in there. So unconsciously, I had done this thing that we talk about with entrepreneurs all the time. We talk about when you're running a startup, when you're getting into business, I just kind of done it accidentally, and it worked. So I did that.
Wow.
During one of the summers before I moved to Montreal, probably two summers before I moved to Montreal, I had a friend reach out and say, hey, do you want a 3-month contract at this company in healthcare that had just gotten a whole bunch of funding from Health Canada because it's socialized health, like we have universal healthcare here. The government gave this company tons of money. It was this branch between it was in health informatics. So between tech and healthcare. And I was like, 23, 24 years old, whatever it was like, I've never worked in an office. That sounds great. So I took a 3-month contract that lasted 11 years.
Wow.
Was there for 11 years. I did a number of different things. I worked in HR for a bit. I worked in change. A lot of the stuff I did was people focused, right? Change management. I did stakeholder engagement, communications. I just kind of moved every couple of years to new areas. Like I got a promotion and moved to a different area, which was great for what I do now because I got to touch a lot of the people sides of the business. Less on the tech side, although I did project management, which was a fun back and forth between tech and business, but I didn't actually do any of the tech side, but I got to be in that world.
So as somebody that's coming from the tech side and knows practically nothing about the HR side, tell me a little bit about that.
What I thought HR was not what my HR experience was, which is really interesting in the work that I do now. So what I was like really low level when I was doing HR, it was like HR coordinator stuff, very general, lots of stuff on benefits, like all the like very transactional side of HR is what I was doing. And the company I worked for, truth be told, as much as their HR partner wanted to be a partner, they were very transactional. It was not about culture. It was not really about people. It was about like, you know, sign the contract, get the contract done. Here's your benefits. Here's what, make sure everyone has pencils. It was that kind of thing. So I did not like it because the thing that I think is great about HR is, and I want to acknowledge this, I fully recognize that benefits and compensation and things like that are an integral part of HR. I 100% that matters. However, if HR is really about humans, if it's really about people, if it's really about creating a system that supports and empowers and enables them, then it has to be about culture and it has to be about leadership and it has to recognize those things. And startups are so much better at doing that than sort of more traditional companies are. And this was a company that was more of a startup before it got the funding and then got really bureaucratic. Right. So it very quickly got out of that. And I was like, this is not fun. It's just paper pushing.
Is that part of what then led to your curiosity and passion in regards to culture building and leadership?
Yeah, it's 100%. When I left the company, I'd already done training to be an executive, executive and business coach. I very specifically done the training. We went through a program focused on that as opposed to something like life coaching because that was not me, but sort of executive business coaching was definitely up my alley. And in starting to work in that area and looking for clients, I started naturally, I don't know if that's the right word for it, but I started attracting startups in Toronto, in the ecosystem. I won an entrepreneur award, ended up in a co-working space that had a lot of startups, ended up working with a bunch of them. I just kind of naturally, it started happening. And culture was a thing that I had been talking about because my experience of culture had been so crap. So I was more talking about it from a, don't do these things.
Right, right. Right.
Like you can do culture intentionally. Culture by design. You can do culture by design. Here's some ideas I have of what that looks like. Here's some ideas of ways you can make that real. And they started hiring me to actually implement it and actually Amazing. Work with them at designing it. And so it was funny because this thing that I was passionate about because I'd had such a terrible experience. And with the note that it took me years inside of corporate to figure out what I didn't like, because I liked a lot of the people that were on my team. I was really lucky. I had incredible leaders that I worked directly for and wonderful teams that I worked on. However, I hated the experience of the company. I hated the experience of all of these other things. And it was a culture thing because they didn't really care. They'd say one thing, do another thing. The leadership was out there talking about something and then doing something totally else, totally different inside the organization. They'd change the, my favorite example is they were talking about changing the mission, something like that, mission vision of the company. They want to update it. So they got everyone in the company into workshops to give their opinion. And the statement that they went with was the statement they came in starting with, because they'd already made the decision. They didn't actually care. Wow. That's a terrible way to develop culture, because what you've said is, we think you care about being involved, but we don't care about your opinion.
Right.
So after experiencing things, I was literally just talking about, don't do these things. And here's 25 examples of things not to do that destroy your culture, once I became aware of the concept.
Wow. And so Celine, before we continue, because you know, as a young entrepreneur myself, that I'm very excited to dive into my own venture sooner rather than later. A lot of my friends listening to this are you know, in their early stage startups. What are some critical things that we should not do as we're building culture, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally? What are some really like don'ts?
Well, so I think, you know, oh my gosh, it's going to sound so basic, but don't say you're going to do something, or don't say things are a certain way and then people have a different experience of it. I think that it's really easy to say, if you're doing it intentionally, it's really easy. I'm going to talk about that and then I'll do unintentional in a second, right? So by design. Yeah. If you're a company, you're starting a business and you're saying, here's what matters to us and here's what we stand for and here's what our values are and here's what, you know, whatever that version of it is for you. And those are all wonderful things to do. However, if the people in your company, I don't care if there are five of them or 500 of them, if that is not their actual lived experience, you are undermining the culture you are trying to build. So you cannot say it is one way and then not have it be that way. I work with large organizations right now on making sure that if they're saying these are their values, this is the vision that they live by, this is how they show up, at making sure and going through and that is the experience of the vast majority of people. And if it's one person's not experience in a large company, if that's not their experience because they don't want it to be, that's very different than this entire team is not operating in that way, right? So making sure that is aligned is really important. Transparency.
And I'm guessing a classic example of that would be, for example, many companies today love saying that they support a bottom-up innovation approach, right? Yep. That they want the top people at the pyramid would love that the bottom level layers bubble up these ideas, and there's going to be people that listen to them and they're going to get heard. And then sometimes when you know, push comes to shove, you have an idea, you go to your boss and you get the door in your face because it's not the KPI that you were tasked to solve by the end of the quarter. So speak to me in Christmas, right? Yep. So and that obviously is something that could very easily undermine a culture and an organization.
Absolutely. That's a great example of it. Another one that I hear a lot is organizations say that they are that feedback matters to them, right? Like whatever their version of we care about feedback, we give feedback all around, you know, we believe in continuous improvement. Feedback is a key, you know, agile organizations often talk about feedback is really important. And when you go to give feedback, people don't listen to it. People ignore it. People don't have the tools to receive it. They get defensive, whatever. That undermines, when that becomes systemic, one person doing it, fine, that person, they can get coached through how to get better at receiving feedback. There's lots of alternatives. But when it becomes systemic, you are undermining the culture that you are purporting to be creating. And so that consistency, I would actually even use the term consistency, might be a better term than what I used before, but consistency inside of what you're saying and then what you're doing is probably the most toxic starting point for what undermines cultures as you are designing them. And I would say that when culture is not if you're not doing culture by design, you're allowing it to happen by default. It's a little bit different, because if you're not saying, here's what we care about as for our culture, here's what we care about for leadership, and it's kind of a free for all, the problem there becomes everyone is doing their own thing and you get siloed, right? You get silos inside the organization. And this happens in, you know, companies of 35 people. It does not have to be a large organization to have communication that is siloed. And the minute communication is siloed, your culture cannot thrive. It cannot, because you're not sharing information. People don't know what's happening. They only care about themselves. It becomes, you know, it's less of a first team mentality and more of a like protective, not sharing information. So it's different, but it's just as toxic.
What has been incredibly successful in building culture intentionally?
First and foremost, hands down, it's getting all the leaders on the same page. It is, if you have one leader who cares about culture and everyone else is just kind of going along for it because they have to, or going along with it because they have to, nothing's going to happen. It's not going to change. Right. It might, while you're working with someone or while it's the conversation topic, people might be like, yeah, let's do this thing. But it doesn't filter down. It doesn't trickle down. It doesn't get to the people that are going to be implementing it every day. So when I started talking about culture, I was like, yeah, you need the leadership on board, but it's not the only thing. I have many more years of experience now in this, and I 100% say this. Yes, everyone being involved matters, but if the leadership is not on board and is not consistent about talking about it, living it, putting it into action, it will not happen in the organization. It will not. So the most important thing is that the leadership is actually on the same page and committed to the same things when it comes to culture and it comes to leadership. And when that happens, truly, and I've worked with incredible organizations where, you know, a new CEO came in or a new, you know, for whatever reason, their lens on culture was different. They made the effort to change the conversation at their direct table level, their leadership level. And within a year, the culture in an organization had transformed.
Wow.
And I'm talking like large organizations. So it's possible, even if it wasn't a conversation before. And I want to acknowledge that, because it's never too late to start this conversation, is my point. It's never too late to start caring about culture, but it definitely, the leadership table has to be committed to it and care about it. And this is what's so nice about startups, is that often the people at the executive table, at the leadership table, are younger and care about it more because they're not used to the way things were done 20 years ago. So it's a great opportunity to really, really change the conversation and get people on board. It's so much easier than someone who's been an executive for 40 years who's like, well, I've always done it this way. I'm going to keep doing it this way. So much easier to do it with startups.
Wow. So what do you get most excited about when you are working as a coach today?
What do I get most excited about? I am really lucky to get to do what I do. And you know, I want to start, it sounds so cheesy, but really, I'm really lucky. I love watching people have a realization, have a shift in their perspective. Like, my company's tagline is shift your perspective, because that's the thing that, you know, the people I work with always say. They're like, every time I talk to you, I get a shift in perspective. You show me a different way of thinking about things. And it's not about me being right and saying this is the way to do it. It's just that little shift becomes a shift in behavior, becomes a shift in something else. And so I love those moments where people have that shift. And I think one of the things that I'm most excited about when I get to work with people is shifting them, I'm going to use the word shift 800 times apparently, but shifting them out of black and white thinking into gray thinking, if you will. But
I love that.
So that's really much. Great. Thank you. And really, so much of how we think about things becomes black or white. You know, I don't care if you are this is your first company you've ever founded. It's in its first year. You're brand new to building this business. You're learning. I guarantee you are operating 90% of the time from black and white thinking. And if you've been doing it for 40 years, you're operating 95% of the time from black and white thinking, because our brain loves certainty. So we create these structures. And, you know, based on, I was raised in a very unique way, by very unique parents under very unique circumstances. And I tend not to do a lot of black and white thinking naturally, less than most people, just because of the nature of how I was raised. And I have all the training now, and I've done so much work in it that it's really, I'm very quick to be like, or we could think about, and people are always like, that's the thing, like just that, that just that helps a ton. And I think those are things that I love watching people have that realization that that thing that they thought was real and right and true was just a construct in their brain, and they get to change it if they want to.
Salim, it's inspiring. I love that thinking. I'm an optimist by nature, and I remember as a team leader in various organizations, and more on the tech side, the thing I hated most was when somebody came to me and said, Michael, we have a problem. And I always asked them to transition to, Michael, we have an opportunity for a solution. They hated my guts for doing that. It annoyed the hell out of them, but at the end, it worked, because that whole shift in mindset and understanding that nothing is black and white. There's always a scale, and you can always tilt the scale, and you'll never get exactly what you want, but it's somewhere there. Celine, thank you for being so generous with your time. Before we leave, I have to ask you the most difficult and important question, which is three words that you would use to describe yourself.
The first one I always use is curious, because I annoyingly ask 1 million questions all the time. So I would say curious is definitely one of them. I would say I'm very earnest. Mm-hmm. So I don't love the word authentic all the time, but I'm very earnest. I believe in people. I believe in the, being who I am and kind of showing up that way. Also probably annoyingly for people in my life. But it is what it is. And I would say that I think I would say courageous. I would say courageous. One of my values is courage. And I tend to take things on with no evidence that they're necessarily going to work and face things as they come, from a place of optimism, much like you, right? Where it's like, I really trust that things are going to work out. And so I just step into it, and I have a lot of courage in the face of the unknown. So I think I would use
fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
Thank you very much. Salim, thank you very much. Stay safe and stay healthy, and continue helping people become better leaders. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. It was lovely to chat with you. I appreciate it.